And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy because there might be something you want to write down, something you might not remember later that's really important and you wish you had. Well, get a pencil and paper and we can solve that problem right now. Right here in Santa Cruz, want to let you know about an event this Sunday. Greg King will be speaking. His topic, the fight to save California's last wild river, and that would be the Smith River. And this is going to take place at the University of California Santa Cruz Arboretum. It's on High Street, west of Western Drive, so you'd go up Bay Street and turn left on High. And then be a ways up there on the right, not too far. Anyway, it's going to be from 4 to 6 p.m. this coming Sunday, November 9th. Award-winning journalist Greg King presents his breathtaking photos of the Smith River in the far northwestern corner of California while discussing the threat of pesticides and other impacts on this, the last of the state's wild rivers. The Smith River is the only major undammed river in California, and it is one of the cleanest and most beautiful rivers in the world. Scientists are relying on the Smith River to maintain healthy populations of salmon and steelhead in order to have viable wild stocks that can recolonize other California and Oregon streams into the future. Yet even on the Smith River, salmonids face an uphill battle against a damaged lower reach and against ongoing pesticide use on Easter Lily farms that surround the Smith River estuary. Siskiyou Land Conservancy Executive Director and President Greg King has been active in California resource protection efforts since 1985. His investigation of illegal logging led to the eventual inclusion into the California State Park system of nearly 10,000 acres of forest land in western Sonoma County. In 1987, Greg King discovered and named Headwaters Forest, containing the largest unprotected ancient redwood groves in the world, 4,000 acres of which were permanently protected after redwood summer in 1997. King founded the nonprofit Smith River Project, dedicated to protecting California's wildest river, and in 2004 he founded Siskiyou Land Conservancy, a land trust and advocacy organization that serves five counties in northwestern California. King is currently writing a book, The Ghost Forest, A History of the Redwood Ecosystem and Redwood Logging and Protection Efforts. His last book, Rumors of Glory, the co-written memoir of Canadian rock star Bruce Cockburn, will be published on Harper One on, well, I guess that was a couple of days ago, November 4th. Anyway, once again, Greg will be speaking at the UCSC Arboretum on High Street, west of Western Drive, 4 to 6 p.m. on this coming Sunday, November 9th. And you ought to get up and see the Smith River, a really pretty place. And if you're a fisherman, you already know about the steelhead and salmon. Going to news from the tree sits in Germany, Hambach Forest. There's a new tree sit and tree felling equipment has been halted. This story from the Hambach Forest blog, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The Hambach or Hambacher Forest is located near Cologne, Germany, and is under threat from an adjacent lignite, that's a brown coal mine expansion. The occupation to keep the trees standing has been ongoing for 3 years. 1,000 meters distant from a new tree occupation in the cutting area of RWE, a harvester has been squatted to block the ongoing fellings. Both occupations are part of the campaign Hands Off the Trees that continues unabatedly in light of last week's repression. And that was a horrible story we read last week from them. Anyway, their slogan, we defend the forest against your violence, since last Thursday, one imprisoned comrade is still awaiting trial in Aachen, Germany. Here in Santa Cruz, Felton Farm is using dogs, not guns, to deter mountain lions in this story by Cara Gutzman of the Scotts Valley Senile. On a wooded ridge between Loch Lomond and Highway 17, livestock farmers Allison Charter Smith and Tony Jenikin have found a safe, friendly alternative to using guns to deter mountain lion attacks. What is it? large fuzzy sheepdogs, of course. This month, Madrone Coast Farm, an 8.2-acre organic farm known for its free-range eggs, became the first farm in the state to receive a wildlife-friendly certification. The couple owns 97 acres of mountain property, mostly forested and frequented by predators. The farm's 25 sheep and hundreds of ducks and chickens are guarded closely around the clock by Luke and Leia, sheepdogs that bark and position strategically when intruders approach. At night, the couple enclose their animals in buildings with motion sensing lights, but the dogs are their first line of defense, said Charter Smith. The dogs take turns sleeping in short naps and don't back down to predators, she said. Other local farms may use a different approach, shooting and killing predators. Those farmers have applied to State Fish and Wildlife to get permits to kill mountain lions that have damaged their property. Once a permit is issued, those farmers have 10 days in which to kill the cat. About 50 mountain lions live in the hills between San Francisco and Santa Cruz, according to Veronica Jovovich, a graduate student at UC Santa Cruz's Puma Research Lab. Since the project's start in 2008, half of the mountain lion deaths in the Santa Cruz area have been due to humans, either car accidents or shootings, both permitted and illegal, she said. Compared with car accidents, shootings kill more mountain lions. According to Fish and Wildlife data, 29 permits have been issued in Santa Cruz County since 1997, and 15 of those have led to mountain lion deaths. Charter Smith, who began farming in 2010 after a Silicon Valley career, said the couple has encountered four mountain lions, one of whom killed a pregnant sheep. Carter Smith said her goal in certification was to provide that peaceful coexistence with predators is possible. You can have both wildlife and livestock and still farm successfully, she said. To receive the certification, the couple also had to show that their ponds were accessible to wildlife and their property has minimal fencing, allowing wildlife to move freely. And scientists have found a new coral species in the waters off of California. This story reported by Daniel Wallace of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. U.S. scientists have discovered a new species of deep-sea coral and a nursery area for cat sharks and skates in the underwater canyons off the coast of Northern California, the researchers said. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said on Wednesday the team used technologies including small submersibles to investigate marine life that has adapted to survive in offshore waters up to 1,000 feet deep. The team made two discoveries off the Sonoma coast, it said, including hundreds of egg casings from skates, which are similar to rays on the seafloor, and in bundles on the rocks surrounding a cat shark nursery area. This is a highly unusual nursery because rarely, if ever, are shark nurseries in the same area as skate nurseries, Peter Etnoyer, a deep-sea biologist at NOAA's National Center for Coastal Ocean Science, said in a statement. Separately, the researchers also discovered corals living at about 600 feet underwater that they said are a new deep-sea species belonging to the Leptogorga genus, NOAA said. The work took place in September close to the Gulf of Farallones and Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuaries, it said, and it was carried out by a consortium of federal and state marine scientists. Prior to the expedition, it added, little was known about the areas except that they were thought to contain nutrient-rich and biologically diverse marine life. The researchers also conducted video surveys of terrain that previously was documented only by sonar imaging. Submarine canyons, such as the area's Bodega Canyon, act as a refuge for important species of fish and provide a habitat for sensitive species of deepwater corals and sponges. Corals are a stationary animal that slowly grows on seafloors over tens or even hundreds of years. Coral reefs are nurseries for many types of fish, and they also help protect coasts from storms and tsunamis, as well as attracting tourists. This work helps inform our knowledge and understanding of areas that are extremely important to the ocean environment, said Danielle Lipsky, Cordell Bank National Marine Sanctuary Research Coordinator and Expedition Leader. And South African authorities have arrested two Vietnamese men with 41 kilos of rhino horn. In this story reported by Helen Nyambura-Mawara, with editing by Toby Chopra, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. South African authorities have arrested two Vietnamese men in possession of 41 kilos of rhino horn. That's about 120 pounds, something like that. The largest haul nabbed in the country, battling to stave off poaching of its dwindling stock of the wild animals. The population of rhinos indigenous to southern Africa is being decimated by poachers who supply a demand for horns for decorative and supposed medicinal purposes, especially in Asian countries. A total of 933 rhinos were killed in South Africa in the year to October from 1,004 in 2003, according to the conservation group Stop Rhino Poaching. The country has an estimated 20,000 rhinos, the biggest population in Africa. The two Vietnamese were booked on a flight to Hanoi from the capital of neighboring Mozambique and were arrested during an hour-long stopover in Johannesburg, South Africa. The horns are believed to have originated in South African parks, a police statement said. And dozens of birds have died after landing on toxic ponds near the Canada oil sands development. This story reported by Naya Williams and Scott Haggett, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. More than 100 waterfowl have been found dead after landing on toxic ponds of industrial waste in northern Alberta's tar sands, according to reports received by Alberta's energy regulators. The AER said 122 waterfowl died after coming into contact with the toxic ponds, also known as tailing ponds, at Canadian Natural Resources Limited's Horizon Project, Suncor Energy's site, and at Syncrude Canada's Mildred Lake site. Weather in the Athabascan oil sands areas may have contributed to the waterfowl landing on the tailings ponds, the AER said, adding it would assess waterfowl migration systems and whether deterrents at the ponds were working properly. Syncrude is owned by a consortium of companies held by the largest owner, Canada Oil Sands Limited. That company was fined $3 million Canadian after an incident in 2008 in which 1,600 ducks died after landing on a Syncrude tailings pond before bird deterrent systems were activated. Oil sands companies are required to have systems in place to discourage birds from landing on the toxic tailings ponds, which are a byproduct of processing crude mined from oil sands. And turning to biological diversity news, the Environmental Protection Agency has okayed a potent pesticide dangerous to monarch butterflies and bats. The Environmental Protection Agency has approved a powerful new pesticide product called Enlist Duo, despite warnings from the Center for Biological Diversity that it could hurt more than 20 endangered species. Neglecting its legal duty to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service about the impacts on wildlife, the Environmental Protection Agency hastily gave the go-ahead for this product, a combination of 2,4-D and glyphosate. This was an unbelievably foolish decision. Enlist Duo will harm dozens of endangered species and is another nail in the coffin for the monarch butterflies, said the center's Brett Hartle. Other species in harm's way by Enlist Duo are Indiana bats, minnows called Topeka shiners, American burying beetles, Heinz emerald dragonflies, and Karner blue butterflies. And a lawsuit to save a rare Okanagan dugong from a United States airstrip. The Center for Biological Diversity joined American and Japanese conservation groups in a lawsuit arguing a federal court to halt construction of a U.S. military airstrip in Okinawa, Japan, that would pave over some of the last remaining habitat of Okinawan dugongs, relatives of manatees. The center has been fighting for years to protect dugongs from this controversial military base expansion in Henoko Bay. Preliminary construction on the base began this year. Dugongs, underwater mammals that look much like their manatee kin, are ancient cultural icons for the Okinawan people, even celebrated as sirens that bring friendly warnings of tsunamis. It was estimated in 1997 that there may have been as few as 50 Okinawan dugongs left. More recent studies have only been able to conclude that are three. These gentle animals are adored by both locals and tourists, said center co-founder Peter Galvin. Paving over some of the last places they survive will not only likely be a death sentence for them, but it will be a deep cultural loss for the Okanagan people. A nationwide agreement is helping to protect wildlife from pesticides. The Center for Biological Diversity recently reached an important agreement that will help protect endangered species across the country from five common pesticides. The deal, which follows lawsuits by the Center for Biological Diversity, requires the United States Fish and Wildlife Service to analyze the impacts of carbaryl, chlorpyrifos, diazinon, malathion, and methomyl, all of which have been found to be toxic to wildlife and may pose a health risk to people. Years ago, the center sued the Environmental Protection Agency for failing to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service about how these pesticides affect endangered California red-legged frogs. The center won an injunction in 2006 imposing restrictions on the chemicals' use until the consultation was completed. The Center for Biological Diversity sued again last year, with those consultations still incomplete. The current settlement now requires the agency to look not only at red-legged frogs, but all endangered species across the country. We don't think these chemicals should even be in use, but at the very least, measures to protect endangered wildlife should have been put in place when these chemicals were first approved, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Colette Adkins Geese. Or Geis. Not sure how she pronounces her name. And grizzlies in Washington's North Cascades, it's now a possibility. The National Park Service has taken an important step towards recovering grizzly bears in North Cascades National Park in Washington State. The agency says it's starting a 3-year process to analyze options for boosting grizzly populations in the area, including the possibility of bringing bears in and developing a viable population. This last summer, the Center for Biological Diversity petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to begin returning grizzly bears to vast parts of the American West. We identified more than 110,000 square miles of potential grizzly habitat, including parts of Washington, California, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, and Colorado. For some reason, Colorado's listed twice here. Although the North Cascades analysis was in the works before we filed our petition, we're glad to see it moving ahead. Grizzly bears have lost more than 95% of their historic habitat in the lower 48 states, said Grizzly Center expert Noah Greenwald. So we welcome any step that brings them closer to returning to some of their ancestral homes. And a court victory has protected habitat for the dusky gopher frog. The Center for Biological Diversity's Colette Adkins Geis, the only lawyer we know devoted solely to defending amphibians and reptiles, has just won a key case to save the dusky gopher frog and give them some southeast forest habitat. The frogs were federally protected in 2002 after much legal work by the center and its allies, and in 2012, 6,477 acres were protected as critical habitat. But the timber industry and others challenged that designation, saying some of the habitat where the frogs last lived in Louisiana wasn't necessary for the species recovery. Colette Geis and others went to court to defend that designation, and a federal judge has recently agreed to uphold the granted habitat protections. And it's a good thing, too. Only about 100 dusky gopher frogs survive, living in underground burrows near just 3 Mississippi ponds. When they're picked up, these frogs rather charmingly cover their eyes with their forefeet to protect their faces. and three southwestern flowers have gotten 2,500 acres of protected habitat. Following the Center for Biological Diversity's 757 species agreement, the Fish and Wildlife Service has protected 2,488 acres of critical habitat for three flowering plants in Alabama, Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. The flowers are Short's Bladder Pod, the Fleshy Fruit Glade Cress, and the Whorled Sunflower. The Center for Biological Diversity first petitioned the service to protect these plants in 2004, but they have been on a waiting list since 1999. The plants were finally protected, and now they have protected habitat, too. So far, under our landmark 2011 agreement to speed protection decisions for 757 species, 130 of them have gained Endangered Species Act protection, including the three flowers, and another 13 have been proposed for protection. Habitat loss is the primary reason plants and animals become endangered, so protecting the last areas where these highly endangered flowers live will help make sure that they aren't erased by careless human activities. And 20 corals have been protected under the Endangered Species Act. Huge news in our work to help oceans. The federal government has protected 20 corals under the Endangered Species Act because of global warming. Disease and ocean acidification are driving them towards extinction. The recent decision, a response to a 2009 petition by the Center for Biological Diversity, protects five corals in Florida and the Caribbean and 15 others in the Pacific Ocean. Coral reefs around the globe are in serious trouble. By the middle of this century, more than 97% of reefs will likely experience extreme thermal stress, which can cause bleaching or even death because of global warming. Disease and acidification are compounding their plight. The development is the single largest protection decision for corals under the Endangered Species Act. This is a wake-up call that our amazing coral reefs are dying and need federal protection, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Miyoko Sakashida. But there's hope for saving corals and many other ocean animals if we make rapid cuts in greenhouse gas pollution to stop global warming and ocean acidification. And after a 90% decline, a petition seeks monarch butterfly protection. Monarch butterflies in the United States are in a deadly freefall. In less than 20 years, their numbers have dropped by 90%, and they've lost more than 165 million acres of habitat, an area the size of Texas. Recently, the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies, including a renowned monarch butterfly scientist, Dr. Lincoln Brower, filed a legal petition to protect them under the Endangered Species Act. The decline of monarch butterflies is being driven largely by planting of genetically engineered crops in the Midwest, where most monarch butterflies are born. These crops are genetically modified to be resistant to Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, also known as glyphosate, a potential killer of milkweed, which is the monarch caterpillar's only food. We're at risk of losing a symbolic backyard beauty that has been part of the childhood of every generation of Americans, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Tierra Curry. The drop in the monarch's population, in human population terms, would be like losing every living person in the United States, except those in Florida and Ohio. And Washington wolves have been targeted by helicopters and traps over... It says over the weekend, but this news is probably a few weeks old. The Center for Biological Diversity learned that Washington State's Wildlife Agency was planning to demolish a pack of wolves by shooting them from helicopters, and one was killed. The targeted wolf family, known as the Huckleberry Pack, has pups born late this spring that will starve if the adults are killed. The Washington State Wildlife Agency said the wolf killed was young. It could even have been one of the pups. Later in the week, the agency switched to trapping, with plans to kill any that they snare. The Huckleberry Pack is being targeted because of recent sheep deaths in the area that could have been prevented without using lethal force. We read a story about that earlier. Instead of allowing non-lethal measures to work, Washington Fish and Wildlife went straight for the deadliest action in its playbook, and these wolves are paying the price. Please go to the webpage www.biologicaldiversity.org and give a donation to the Predator Defense Fund and find out more information about what's left of the Huckleberry Pack. And a landmark coral plan is tackling global warming and ocean acidification. The federal government has just announced a recovery plan for two imperiled corals in Florida and the Caribbean that call for on-the-ground measures to stop global warming. The elkhorn and staghorn corals were the first species ever protected because of the threat of global warming, thanks to a petition and litigation by the Center for Biological Diversity. Global warming causes coral bleaching when it heats up the ocean waters. Ocean acidification results from too much carbon dioxide being absorbed by water, which then become more acidic and weaken the exoskeletons of corals and other key marine organisms. After more work by the Center for Biological Diversity, the National Marine Fisheries Service finally released the plan, including a call for lowering carbon emissions that are both driving higher ocean temperatures and ocean acidifications. Now these beautiful branching corals have a chance to thrive again. And that's all the time we have for environmental news this week. Tune in every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 for the Earth First Update. You can hear a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. If you'd like to tune in to Radio or Free Radio Edmonton, yegradio@wordpress.com. That's yegradio@wordpress.com. You can hear the Earth First Update at 2 o'clock on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays, Mountain Time. Or if you're in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to KRFP 90.3 FM, 9:30 on Monday nights. Or you could go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And I'd like to point out that radioforall.net is also supported by users. For many years, it has been a place for radio stations and programs like this one to archive their shows and distribute them to other radio stations. So please help support radioforall.net. Go to their webpage and click on their donate button. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update.